you know, every trend we've covered in the past 20 years has had a life cycle of, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 years. When you think, for instance, how long it took us to get to the cloud, or how long, like I said, how long it took us to the profession to realize that, you know, just for your day was okay, or that remote work was okay. And we're only now really seeing remote work be something that you can do without being questioned.
Welcome back to Future Proof. As always, I am your host, Bill Sheridan. So confession time, folks. I am not a CPA. Now that may or may not come as a surprise to you. I don't know. But it's funny when I tell people who aren't connected to our profession, rather that I work for the Maryland Association of CPAs, a lot of them assume that I'm a CPA. And people who know me will probably laugh their asses off hearing that. I am definitely not a numbers guy, and my wife will back me up on that. That's why she handles the money in our family. No, what I am is a journalist by trade. I spent the early part of my career as an editor at a daily newspaper. And then when the internet arrived, I moved over to online journalism before eventually making my way into corporate communications. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying that I have a soft spot in my heart for journalists. They do really important work, and usually without a whole lot of credit being thrown their way. But think about it. Journalists are your lifeline to what's going on in the world. We don't have time to find this stuff out on our own. We rely on them to give us the information that matters to us. And that's a hugely important role. And so I'm really excited about this week's guest. He's Daniel Hood, the editor-in-chief of Accounting Today, which is a fantastic source of news and resources specific to our profession. He's a great guy. We had a great conversation about what's happening in our profession today and what accounting and finance pros should be paying attention to. We'll get to all that here in just a minute. First, here's what caught my eye this week. It comes from Hood's own publication, Accounting Today, and it's about the tax day outage at the IRS back in April. Remember that? A number of critical systems went down at the IRS on tax day, of all days, on the day that individual returns were due, and the IRS ended up extending the filing deadline by a day as a result. There were initially some fears of a cyber attack, but they were pretty quickly determined that that was not the case. But they didn't know exactly what was going wrong that day. Well, a new report is out that identifies the cause of the outage. Turns out it was a firmware bug that caused something called a storage array to fail. There's kind of an interesting twist to the story, though. Here's how Accounting Today puts it. The article reads, quote, IBM had identified the particular bug at fault in the IRS outage as far back as June 2017 and had developed a fix and released that fix with its November 2017 microcode bundle. However, a contractor recommended keeping an older microcode bundle because it was considered more stable, and the IRS agreed with the recommendation, end quote. A bit of irony there. What was thought to be more stable turns out to be anything but, right? The article goes on to say that the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, which released the report, is recommending that the IRS formalize and document, quote, both its intended response to the outage and its ongoing monthly microcode bundle meetings, and that it modify its contract with its storage services provider and seek damages, end quote. And for its part, the IRS appears to agree on all counts and has begun complying with those directives. So interesting stuff there. And welcome to Dan Hood's world. This is what he and his team do every day, reporting on the stuff that's happening in our profession so that we can be better informed, so that we can have the information we need to do our jobs just a little bit better. And for this particular conversation, I asked Dan to look a little further down the road and identify the issues that aren't necessarily ready for prime time now, but that have the potential to significantly impact our profession tomorrow. He pointed to some usual suspects in the technology area, but he also offered some surprises as well and some interesting ideas for what CPAs should be doing now to prepare for the profession of tomorrow. So good stuff here. Well worth a listen. Here's Daniel Hood. So, Daniel Hood, thanks for being here. It just occurred to me, I mean, we've known each other for a while now, but I don't I don't think I really know how Dan Hood became Dan Hood. Could you, what's your background? Where'd you come from and how'd you end up here?
Well, the short version is I started in production and design, and there was a point in the 90s where those two things, production and design and editorial, merged very briefly because of desktop publishing. So I became managing editor of Accounting Today because the managing editor of Accounting Today needed to be able to do the production and design and then also to be able to spell. I could do all of that. And so from there, I became a managing editor in the late 90s and have been following accounting ever since. And at some point, the publishing and design or production and design stuff fell away, and I started focusing on covering the profession full time.
I see. All right. Well, that's interesting. So let's talk about the profession for a little bit. You're a journalist. I'm a journalist, or at least I used to be back in the day. And so we both know, I guess, the best way to learn anything is about anything, really, is to talk to people. And find out what they're seeing. And you've talked to more people in this profession than pretty much anyone else I know. So here's my question. What have you learned lately about this profession that's surprised you, I guess? Let's start with that.
Wow, so much. Because one of the things that's nice about covering accounting is it's fairly constantly surprising. I think a lot of people outside the profession don't realize how much there is sort of going on under the surface. They think accountants are sort of dull and staid and conservative. And actually, there's a lot of ferment and a lot of things changing on a regular basis. And I think what surprises me, what I continually learn that surprises me is how big a set of differences there are among different, I'm not sure the right way to describe it, but different tiers of accountants. And I think that those differences are growing. And I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about is the difference between how an accountant at a Big Four firm or accountant at a top 100 firm, or an accountant at a top 500 firm, or a sole practitioner, a small practitioner, how they view what an accountant does and what the practice of accounting is going to be in the future, I think it's very different. And I think that over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see those differences expand a lot. I think there are come to the surface and grow more as what accountants at larger firms do differs more and more and more from what sole practitioners and small accountants at small firms, what they do changes.
So tell me a little bit about what you're hearing in as much as what folks at large firms think about what's happening in the profession and where this profession is going versus those smaller practitioners. What are those differences?
So I think the main one is encapsulated in the move towards the higher value added services or advisory services, or there's a bunch of different names for it, but that move to away from compliance and historically focused services and towards more and more advisory services. And accountants have always offered advisory services, but there's a change in how they're viewing it in the sense of, and again, this is at larger firms, they're viewing it instead of saying, well, we mainly offer you compliance services, but then in addition, we offer you all these excellent advisory services. Mm-hmm. It's flipping to, we offer you mainly these advisory services, and yes, we also take care of your compliance stuff. So it's flipping the mm-hmm. focus there. And I think that's happening much more at larger firms, or these larger firms are much more on top of it and pursuing it than it is at small firms and sole practitioners, the sort of Main Street CPA. I don't think that switch is something that the smaller accountants are pursuing to anything like the degree that larger firms are. Now, there may be a time 15 years from now where everybody sort of comes together and the sort of divergence that I'm talking about closes up again. But I think for the next 5 to 10 years, at least, we're looking at a lot of that. And a lot of it's driven by technology. The technologies that everyone's talking about are likely to change the profession, from AI to robotics to blockchain. Those are all technologies that, at the moment at least, are much more available or much more understandable for larger firms. They can invest in them. They can set aside people to go study them, to look at them, to figure out how they're going to apply to accounting. And I don't think that's those resources and that time and that focus is not available for small practitioners.
Yeah, just kind of a access to resources type of thing. Then
exactly.
Yeah. So, and I'll get to technology here in a couple of minutes. A couple of years ago, a report came out, and I think it was from CPA.com that showed that only 8% of CPAs identified themselves as future ready. And I guess based on what you're seeing, do you think that's improved over the last couple of years? Are we better prepared now as a profession for these types of changes that are coming?
I think as a profession, yes. But you know, what is that sort of averaging it across the profession? I think you know, one of the interesting things we do our top 100 firms survey and our top 100 people survey, and in each one of them, we sort of ask people, you know, what do you think of the big issues? So they get it both from a firm perspective and then also from a sort of a thought leader's perspective. And one thing we heard a lot about this year is almost a sort of a FOMO, a fear of missing out in terms of technology. People are very concerned about making sure they're keeping up with technology, making sure that they're, I know we're going to talk about technology in more detail later, but the point is of this is that even at the highest levels, even among, you know, sort of the thought leaders, the profession, and among the leaders of the top firms, there's a serious concern about technology, which you didn't see 10 years ago or 5 years ago. People weren't at that level, weren't as focused on it and weren't as determined to make sure that they brought it into all their practices. And so I think, and that's a big part of being future ready, right? So I think there's a sense that the profession at the highest levels is more aware and better prepared, or becoming better prepared. But I'm still waiting to see that sort of trickle down to, I'm saying lower and higher. That's merely in terms of size of firm and, sure, and amount of revenue. It's not a value judgment. But you know, there's a vast majority of accountants work at small firms, and I think the vast majority of them are still not quote future ready.
So and beyond that focus on technology, what gaps still remain? What do you think we still need to do or aren't doing well enough in terms of ramping up for what's coming?
Right. I think it's being ready and willing to change. You know, being ready and willing to say, well, this is what my practice has been so far, but what should it be going forward? You know, if you look at the sort of standard services of the accounting profession, they have not changed. You know, in the past 50 years, the vast majority of change that we've seen in them has been in the last 10. So for 40 years, they didn't really change very much. And I think accounting firms, particularly smaller firms, need to be more willing to adapt, to change, to recognize new things. I mean, even if it's something as simple as, you know, dress for your day policies, the fact that that's still something that some firms don't have or are sort of on the fence about, that seems sort of weird to me. That's not a future ready firm. And that's just an example of it. I should also say, I mean, it's worth pointing out that large numbers of accountants, and particularly firm leadership at all levels, whether from the smallest firm up to the largest firm, they tend to be older, and a lot of them are baby boomers, and a lot of them are looking ahead and saying, well, do I really need to be future ready if my future is only 5 years? You know, if I'm going to retire in 5 years or 10 years, you know, how future ready do I really need to be? Can I get away with not adapting to all the new things that are coming along? So I think that's worth bearing in mind. You know, when we say it's not really, again, it's not about a value judgment or saying, oh, they just don't want to advance, or they don't want to adapt, they don't want to change. Some of it's also just based on, you know, is it worth changing if you're going to retire in 5 years?
Right.
But so I would say, you know, firm management, all those sort of firm management and what your practice looks like, and are you really advisory? I think there's also a need for firms to be willing to take more risk. I mean, a lot of things that are involved in creating the advisory services firm or a higher value added services firm, they do involve taking more risk and going out more on a limb and looking to the future and sort of predicting the future a little bit more than previous types of, you know, the sort of core traditional services of accounting firms, which have been able to say, you know, I can say, I've looked at this, you know, I've looked at your books and this is, you know, I can say you're a going concern or not, or I've prepared your taxes based on all the information you've given me. There's a lot of certainty involved in those services and the ability and willingness to accept the uncertainty that comes with some of the more forward-looking services is an area where I think a lot of firms are still sort of not comfortable with that. They still need to ramp up their willingness to do that sort of thing.
Right. And on the other hand, I mean, certainly there are some folks out there who are doing a lot of things right. I mean, what things do you think we are doing right? I mean, have you talked to anybody recently who is doing something you thought was particularly innovative and you said, well, that's an interesting idea? What kind of stuff like that have you seen?
Well, I see, you know, in various levels, you see a lot of it. You do see a lot of firms and opening up to new service areas, cybersecurity. You know, every week we hear of another firm that's added a cybersecurity or cyber services division. We see firms expanding out into other areas that they wouldn't have been in the past. A lot more people moving into financial services or financial planning, for instance. Not that that's a, you know, that's a lot of firms have been offering that for a long time, but we're seeing more and more firms that are willing to expand into new service areas that are not the, the traditional sort of comfortable audit, tax, and bookkeeping sort of services. So we are definitely seeing more and more firms expand into those areas. You know, and off the top of my head, I mean, those are the ones that I'm finding interesting, is the people who are finding new. So I'll give you two examples of firms that I think are doing interesting things. One was a top 100 firm in Atlanta that essentially their auditing, they brought all their auditing skills to bear on the title agent, title company, and title research industry. There are a set of industry best practices that they're industry organization expects them all to follow, and being able to demonstrate compliance with that and that you follow all those practices, best practices, is a bonus for those companies. So this firm created essentially an audit for companies in that industry to make sure that they're applying it. So I just love the idea of taking the sort of core audit skills, core accounting skills, and applying them to a new area, you know, basically creating a new kind of audit. The second one I'll bring up is a firm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. All the people in it, so it's only a 4 or 5 person firm. They all fly. They all love to fly.
As in
flying small aircraft.
Got it. Okay.
And their offices are at the Fort Lauderdale Airport. And what they have done for a long time, in addition to regular accounting services, they've also focused very much on handling the record keeping and sort of calculation processes for corporate ownership of aircraft. There's all kinds of very, very complicated, arcane, esoteric rules around that in terms of what you can deduct and what you can depreciate and how it all works. And so they had created this whole process because they love flying. They're like, well, how can we combine accounting and flying? And they have for years handled these things for other accounting firms. In large part, they'd do it for regular corporations as well, but they would go out to accounting firms and say, listen, if any of your business clients have corporate aircraft, we specialize in just this. We won't take clients away from you. We'll just make sure give you the service of being able to supply experts in the record keeping and calculation and all that sort of stuff. And to do that, they created a set of software that was internal to them to allow them to offer their services to other accountants, business clients. And then they started to realize, well, wait, we can actually just, you know, we can't possibly do all the, handle all the other accounting firms' clients that might come to us. We could just sell the software to them. So in addition to offering the service themselves, they're now sort of a software vendor where they'll sell their software make their software available to other accounting firms that want to apply it to all their business clients who have this unique need. And I just thought that was great. They went from finding a way to partner with other accounting firms with a very unique niche service, and then going from there to saying, well, we have this internal, intellectual property, this software that's super valuable and that will fill a need that we can't on our own because we don't have enough people to offer the service to everybody who needs it. We can make the software available so that, for all the people we can't directly help, we can still help them. I thought that was two sort of very forward-thinking examples of what firms are doing that are interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Getting back to a ton of stuff flying around that is having a huge impact on the profession nowadays, and a lot of things certainly high on the hype scale. What issue that you and your team have covered recently do you think has the potential for the greatest impact on this profession going forward? And you could probably throw a dart at a board and pick any one.
I sort of cheat on this sometimes and say that the biggest thing is just change, being ready to adapt to change. Everything is changing, every aspect of the firm, from the services to the tools to the staff to the career path. That's kind of a cheat to say. The ability to figure out how you're going to change and to adapt to change and to set up systems that allow you to roll with whatever change comes your way. But if I was going to specifically pick one, it would, we talked about technology, and it really does come down to the ways in which technology is going to reshape what accounting firms do. And some of it won't be just the technology, it'll be clients and markets and accountants' reaction to that technology. If you look at, for instance, blockchain, at the moment, blockchain is, it's all hype. And the hype would have you believe that it's going to completely destroy and then require the rebuilding of the accounting profession on new models. Well, probably not. You know, I mean, nothing ever lives up to that level of hype. But even if it comes along, you know, 10% of that hype, you are looking at a potential for the accounting profession to move from looking at numbers purely as numbers or transactions purely as transactions and to look more at systems, to be less about auditing actual numbers and more about auditing systems that produce numbers. So we sort of say, well, we're going to assume we want someone to look at this system and prove to us that it's delivering reliable information. Because if it's delivering reliable information, then we've got all kinds of systems that can then analyze it and look through it and take care of it. We won't need, you know, a lot of the accounting services that we get now in terms of bookkeeping and write-up and looking at the numbers at the end of the season or looking or at the end of quarter or looking at what might go into a tax return, you know, at the end of the year. We want to make sure that the systems that produce the information that go into those reports or forms or filings or whatever the case may be, we want to make sure those systems are accurate. I think that's a huge area that accountants may need to move into because if they don't, then people will say, well, I can have systems do, I can have machines do a lot of what accountants are currently doing. What I really need is someone to provide the assurance that accountants used to provide on all those numbers to the systems that now produce the numbers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's making that distinction clear, but basically the difference between we can have computers, you know, go through numbers and they can go through it much, much faster and much more accurately and they never get tired and they never make mistakes and they never transpose figures or anything like that. And, you know, because we didn't have them before, we needed people to do that and people with expertise and the accountants brought that. But as we go forward and as computers and artificial intelligence and all the different technologies that are being brought to bear on commoditizing a lot of those activities, as they get better and better and those activities become more and more commoditized, accountants are going to need to find a way to a role for themselves. And the natural role is to be the people who look at the systems and say, okay, yes, the system is doing what it's supposed to do. And obviously will require some of the old skills, but a lot of new ones as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That idea of having to unlearn and relearn some real vital skills for the future is I hear that more and more. And it's just this idea. I mean, CPAs have always been lifelong learners. It's kind of baked in their DNA, but I think what they learn is changing radically and will continue to.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because you hear was it learn, unlearn, and relearn? Is that phrase you're referring to is great. But I think a lot of accountants go, oh, I don't want to have to relearn a whole new set of skills or a whole new whatever. But as you point out, I mean, accountants have always been learning, right? Mm-hmm. Every year they get a whole new, not a whole, hell new, but a vast number of changes to the tax code. They get, you know, new accounting standards all the time. They get new regulations and they're really good at taking all that and digesting it and then turning around and applying it or explaining it or whatever the case may be. They can be really good at this. Mm-hmm. And it is a sort of core competence, but I don't think that they don't think of themselves that way when it comes to some of these broader reskillings and unlearnings and relearnings. You know, when somebody says, well, you've got to have to learn to do a little bit more with data analytics, they say, oh, I don't want to do that. That's a whole new skill. It's a whole new thing. And it's so far away from what I do. Well, you know, you're good at it. If you can, you know, learn and relearn and unlearn the tax code every year or every time Congress, you know, decides to make a change, you can certainly learn and unlearn and relearn some of these other skills. And it's just a matter of thinking about it in terms of, you know, as a skill set that you have. And I think that's part of the thing is they don't necessarily think of it as, you know, they don't break that skill of being able to, like I said, to learn a whole new set of rules, digest them, and then turn around and explain and apply them quickly and well. They don't realize that's the skill they have. They don't realize that the skill is you're good at learning new things and applying them intelligently.
Sure.
They think I'm good at the tax code. You know what I mean? Right. Or I'm good at accounting standards.
No, they're good at learning.
And I think once they start to think about it a different way, they can that'll be a good thing for them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, what are some other things happening out there today that are kind of a little further back on that hype cycle, right? What the kind of things that are flying underneath the radar that we should be paying more attention to? What are you hearing about things that we're not paying attention to, but really ought to?
Well, that's interesting. Well, we're paying a lot of attention to the staffing and bringing on new staff. Mm-hmm. I think one thing we're not thinking about in terms of that is because it's so difficult to get staff, a lot of firms, and you hear a lot about the sort of the firms of the future is going to be more, less of a pyramid shape and more of a diamond shape, where you have a smaller number of people coming in to the profession. Obviously there's the problem of, well, if you have a smaller number of people coming into the profession, you know, that sort of diamond point at the bottom, mm-hmm. where are you going to get all the people for the middle? I think that's a major issue. I also think how they're going to get trained is an issue. If you're bringing fewer people in, and a lot of the reason you're able to do that is because you're automating a lot of the entry levels, the tasks and all that sort of stuff. I think firms are going to need to rethink how they train people. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're necessarily thinking a lot about that. An area that I don't think a lot of people are necessarily focusing on, Barry Melanson talks about this a lot. He talks about, the kids coming out of college now, they'll have a lot less trouble adapting to the change in, you know, the change that's coming to the accountant skill set and the changing things they'll need to learn. They're going to have less trouble with that because they're used to a lot of these technologies that are bringing the changes. They're younger, they're right out of learning, they're, you know, right out of the major institutions of learning. So they're going to be good at learning. It's the 30 and 40 year olds that maybe will have a little bit more trouble adopting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned the baby boomers are probably going to retire before a lot of this stuff comes along. But that middle range of accountants will find themselves stuck between a much more comfortable and well understood past and a much more uncertain future that they're going to have to reskill themselves for. And that skill of learning and unlearning and relearning is, while it is one, like I said, that they have, realizing that you need to apply that to yourself and your career is, it can be a little daunting. So I think those sort of personnel issues, you know, helping accountants of all ages navigate the next 10 to 15 years, I don't know that people are really thinking about it as much as they need to, in part because no one is necessarily individually responsible for it.
Right.
Larger firms may be thinking about that a little bit more than the rest of the profession, just because they're used to managing careers throughout a whole lifetime, mm-hmm. too long, you know, throughout a longer stretch of someone's career. But I think for everybody else, no one's quite sure who's responsible or what it's going to mean.
Yeah, and I worry a little bit with all this change that's kind of swarming around us. Is this profession changing what it does and how it works fast enough? I mean, what's your gut telling you?
I guess, you know, it's tough to say, in part because I'm not sure that clients have necessarily changed their expectations of accountants as much as we might think. I think they are changing them somewhat, but I think that's what drives accountants, is the pace of change at which their clients need them to adapt. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that their clients are pushing them as fast as they might to so that they'd be falling behind. I think accountants are keeping up with what their clients want from them. Now, there may come a time in the future where the pace of change to which accountants are comfortable moving, and generally speaking, the profession moves slowly. I can tell you this, every trend we've covered in the past 20 years has had a life cycle of, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 years. When you think, for instance, how long it took us to get to the cloud, or how long, like I said, how long it took us to the profession to realize that, you know, dress for your day was okay, or that remote work was okay. And we're only now really seeing remote work be something that you can do without being questioned. You know, it's been in the air for 5 years, 10 years, but it was always, you'd go in and say, yeah, I'd like to work from home. And your boss would say, oh, okay, what's the problem? So, well, there's no problem. I just want to work from home. And, right. You know, managers and bosses assumed that if you wanted to work from home, there was an emergency, and that's what working from home was for. Whereas maybe it's just, I want to work from home, so I shouldn't need an emergency to justify it. Anyway, so that's, you know, all of these things take a long time for the profession to study, get comfortable with, and then adopt. So I think there's that's the pace of change which things happen. I haven't yet seen anything where I feel like the profession needs to adapt much more quickly than it usually does. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we do see things like that in the next 5 years, where we see things that really do require a much faster pace of change and pace of adoption among the profession. But I haven't seen what it is yet. So I'm sort of waiting. I mean, you sort of think, well, you know, given how much faster things are going nowadays, you said you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. You've been able to adapt to a lot of things on your own pace for most of the history of the profession. Are we going to come up against something that really does require them to change faster? I haven't seen what that is yet. I am a little worried about it. But on the other hand, I do think that a lot of people are thinking about it.
Right.
you know, so that when it comes, at least people won't be entirely stunned and like, you never told us we'd have to adapt this quickly.
Yep. So lots of talk about disruption in this profession. I'm interested, how is your profession being disrupted right now? What kind of trends are you watching in the world of journalism? What's happening there?
Well, you know, it's funny. I always think about this when I'm talking about the accounting. When I think about the differences between accounting profession and journalism, I always think, well, there's a lot of both professions face enormous changes and enormous disruption and potential disintermediation. With accountants, I always look at it and say, well, yes, there's tremendous disruption coming your way, but the upside, you know, if you adapt and react relatively well, the upside is enormous. You know, much happier clients, much more satisfying work, higher revenues, higher billings, all that sort of stuff. The potential upside to all these disruptions to accounting is enormous. When I look at what's happening to journalism, I see no potential upside. The best we can hope for is to sort of continue to survive. Part of the thing is that you're seeing the ability to create content is really, I don't want to saying it's been democratized isn't quite the right word, but you know, when you look at all the different people in accounting who at accounting firms where their marketing directors are telling them to be a thought leader, you know, make yourself a thought leader, write articles, write blogs, all of that in a way sort of directly competes with us, with you know what journalists do. And if people can find that information much more readily from a million sources on the internet, that creates some difficulties for us as journalists. For a couple of reasons, as you said, you know, one of the things we do, we talk to a lot of experts. We're not, generally speaking, experts ourselves. We may become experts over time, but our main expertise is talking to actual experts and, you know, understanding, digesting, and then sharing their information with our audience, whatever our audience may be. More and more, you know, you're finding that those experts can go directly to whoever they want to talk to. You know, it's you don't, less and less, I think, do accountants need, for instance, journalists to tell them what's going on with their software systems, because they can interact directly with the software vendors, and the software vendors are happy to go straight to their users and user groups and all that sort of thing. So I still think there's, you know, a lot of room for us, because a lot of these issues require just the time to be able to sit back and say, you know, what's really going on here. But a lot of what had been the bread and butter of journalism, I think, is being crowdsourced and outsourced, and this, I'm calling it democratization. It's not really probably the right word, but it's the ability of everybody to participate in that sort of general news gathering and sharing has taken a lot of our sort of our basic work out from underneath us, and put us on our mettle in terms of, you know, making sure that we really are, with everything we do, providing value, whether it's through higher level analysis of what's going on and what's changing, or digging deeper and finding the stuff that people, you know, people aren't looking for, or aren't aware of. It's you know, it's exciting times in the most terrifying meaning of that phrase. You know, it's an exciting time to be in journalism and watch things change. I will say one of the things that's nice about being in trade journalism is that I think it's a little bit less susceptible to a lot of that disruption, in the sense of, you know, if you're working in any particular industry or profession, as with accounting. The need for reliable, regular, constant information is probably stronger than it is if you're just an average consumer who looking to know what's going on in the news. Mm-hmm. So we have a little bit of an advantage there, where you know, you can put it at the basic, you know, people got to read us for work. People need to read our content to know what's going on in their jobs, and they need to keep up with their jobs. And particularly as there's change going on so much in the profession, that works to our advantage. But it certainly insulates us a little bit from some of the disruption.
Yeah, that's interesting. How else are you becoming more future ready to kind of safeguard yourself against all these kind of terrifying disruptions that are impacting what you do?
Well, one of the things, this podcast is a great example. You know, we've got a podcast series as well, and you know, one of the things that I think a lot of journalists are realizing is that. And this goes back to that, you know, what is your core skill? Well, our core skill isn't printing words on dead trees. Our core skill, like I said, is gathering information, digesting it, analyzing it, and then sharing it with people who need to know it. And one of the things we're doing is finding new ways to share it, and making sure that it isn't just written word, it's podcasts, it's webinars, it's slideshows, it's whatever the case may be, videos, you know, however it makes sense to get the information out to the audience. And so we're pursuing a lot of those, moving into a lot of those areas. Obviously, we're, you know, the web is now the primary source of information and on most everything. So we're making sure that we're there and that our content is distributed in all the different forms it can. We're also, you know, looking on at making sure that we're active on social media, and in part because that helps us find out what's going on. There's a lot of, you can learn a lot about what's going on in any particular profession by looking at its social media channels. But it also, again, it helps us distribute our information and our content a lot more broadly. So I think that those are our main focuses, are making sure we're getting our stuff out in all the different formats that you know, someone might want to access it through. And then also making sure that we're active and out there and paying attention in all those different areas as well.
Well, Daniel Hood, thanks so much for being our eyes and our ears, as always. And thanks for being here today, too. I appreciate your insights. Thanks.
I don't know. Thank you, Bill.
That was Daniel Hood, Editor-in-Chief of Accounting Today. You can get all of today's news at accountingtoday.com. And don't forget to sign up for their daily e-newsletter. It's a great way to stay informed. And you can actually meet and hear Daniel in person at the MACPA's 2018 CPA Summit. It's scheduled for December 6th in Towson, Maryland. He'll be part of a media panel that I'll be moderating. It's going to be a great day with some eye-opening, thought-provoking sessions. Don't miss it. You can get all the details and register at macpa.org/summit.